Hi everyone, I'm Liam and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to the show, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us in this financial way really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, let's get started. This week we're looking at element 2.2.2, incident and emergency management. It's part of Quality Area 2, Children's Health and Safety, and it's the second element of Standard 2.2, Safety. The description for this element is, plans to effectively manage incidents and emergencies are developed in consultation with relevant authorities, practiced and implemented. All right, so what's this one all about? This is another one of the Quality Area 2 elements that are pretty straightforward. They're asking us for some pretty direct, specific stuff. There's a lot of links to the national law and the national regulations, which I won't go into great detail in this episode, but very worth checking out the specific requirements under the regulations. But in terms of the national quality standard part of this of incident emergency management, this is really about having a clear plan for how we manage incidents and emergencies, and that largely includes drills, emergency evacuation practices, lockdown practices, those kind of things. So it's about making sure that the service has a plan for the educators to handle these calmly and effectively, and that we learn lessons from particular incidents and we learn lessons from how we practice incidents to ensure that the children and visitors to our centre and educators and families are safe in the service. All right, let's have a look at what this one looks like in practice. Again, as with many of the Quality Area 2 elements, the law and the regulations, as well as the standard, are asking for some pretty specific things for us. The most common regulation that people would be familiar with is around the requirement to be practicing emergency evacuation drills at least every 3 months. But again, it's worth reading those really specifically. These guides, these Exploring the NQS, we're going to really look at sort of the quality improvement part and the practice part of how we can be meeting or exceeding these elements. So the first thing to think about is how we plan for incidents and emergencies, how we respond to them, and what we do before things happen. That's really what planning is about. The first thing that you would see, services that were doing this really well, is that there would be investigation of the best methods for emergency management that are relevant to your service. The starting point here for me would be whatever your local, state and territory work safety body run by the government would be. So in the ACT in Canberra here for me, it's ACT WorkSafe. It'll be called something similar in your state and territory, but even just going to their website is a really great place to start. You may find guides for emergency management procedures, evacuations, how to do those kind of things. It's really best to get this stuff direct from the source, and your local work safety body is really the best advice I can give is go there first. So just either Google work safety in your state and your territory and you should find something there. In terms of planning, you want to really think about your service in particular. I think sometimes we think about emergency evacuations as kind of being the same everywhere. Everyone sort of rings a bell and then everyone sort of files out and meets someone and then goes back in. And that may be kind of overall true, but the whole point of this element is we want to be targeting this to the particular service we're in. And we know under the National Quality Standard that every single service is different, which means that every single service will have particular emergency management things they'll need to put in place. So it's really about asking yourself, what are the specific risks and challenges that you may face in this service that may not be faced by another service or may be really unique to your service? One of the examples I would use here is as we look at this is even true in sort of regional rural towns, is that your service may be really near a main or a busy road. So you have specific risks and incidents that may be taking place that are different from, a service located in the middle of a suburb that may not even be near a road. You may have to go into a big car park to get to it. You really need to think about what the risks of that might be. Another one, which is we see the huge number of centres now being built and made ready that are in high-rise buildings. And there's actually been some media around this at the start of 2019. We really need to think about some specific risks that can happen in those services and how managing emergencies and incidents can be really challenging. Do you rely on someone else to be supporting you with incident injury? To incident and emergency management. An example here might be a service located in a shopping centre. We have these around, and you may be required to work with the owner of that building to help you be evacuating. You may be needing to follow their emergency and incident management plans as well. So you really need to think about what makes your service unique. Even services that seem to have low risk will have some specific ones that you want to think about. You also want to think about, are there different risks at different times of the day? Is it more challenging to do an emergency evacuation right at the start of the day? Is that a busy time as families arriving and the same at the end of the day? What about during meal times, during sleep times? So even just across the day, there are some specific ones. A new challenge, I think, which has only really started in the last sort of 6 months or so, is due to the federal government's new childcare subsidy regulations around the need for reporting sign-in and out times. The majority of services have now moved to electronic sign-in and sign-out, which has some benefits, but I think has some challenges for emergency evacuation. So you want to think about, is the program you're using allow you to take, you know, a sign-in and out record with you during emergency evacuations, or do you still need to keep a paper-based copy? I don't have the answer to those questions for you, but you will want to think about them. And I imagine for that one, probably that's already come up for you. That's a great example of a specific challenge you might want to face. You also need to be thinking about in your planning, this is not just around evacuating due to a fire. I think that's the most common one we think of. But we also want to think about things like lockdowns, where court orders may be breached and someone who's not allowed to come to the service is there, or just something happening in the community. And, you know, other incidents such as, you know, bushfires, which are external to the service, or other, you know, large-scale incidences. Another thing, a practical thing to be thinking about in planning is when you have your evacuation or lockdown bag, really think about what needs to go in there. Don't just, you know, copy what another service does or keep the one that, you know, if that evacuation bag has been the same for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, really take a step back, take everything out and think, what do we need in these modern times? A phone is really, really important. It's one of the clear requirements of the regulations and this standard is access to a mobile phone to be making sure that, you know, you can call for help if you need to. The next thing to think about after planning is that communication piece. And really, you know, the planning is only as good as how it's implemented, and it can only be implemented if people know what they need to do. So the first thing to think about is, of course, educators. They will be largely running these emergency evacuations. So this is important to think about at induction. You know, when new educators are starting, are we talking about the emergency and evacuation procedures for the service? That's really, really vitally important. And then how that's reminded and walked through throughout the year. That can be done at staff meetings and during those drills and emergency evacuation procedures that you go through as well. It's also really important to let families know what's going on for a couple of important reasons. One, it's about demonstrating to families that we're taking the health and safety of their children really seriously, that this is the reason why we do this, and the reason why it's in the law and the regulations. But also families may be present during an actual incident or emergency or a drill, for one. And you want families to take it seriously as well. So making sure that, you know, on enrollment, as part of the enrollment pack or as part of your verbal conversations with families, you talk about that approach to incident emergency management, explain how and why you do particular things. And then, you know, just the more communication you can do with educators and families will just improve the times when that has to happen. But there is an equally third, or possibly more important, third group to be discussing these things with, and that's children. It's really, really important that we talk about and discuss incident emergency management with children. And critically, not just when something happens or just when we're doing a drill. We should make it a regular part of our discussions with children around why we do particular things, why we have particular processes to keep children safe. And there's a couple of important reasons for that for me. One is, you know, obviously a learning and well-being piece. This is an opportunity for children to learn something about how and why particular things are done to keep people safe, how to support themselves to keep each other safe. Support them to keep each other safe, and there's a whole big learning piece there. But the main reason that we want to do this as regularly as we can and as honestly and upfront as we can is we don't want children to be surprised and worried when particular things happen, whether it's a real incident or an emergency evacuation. You want children to be as prepared as possible. You don't want it to be shocking and concerning or maybe even fun. We want this to be something that children take seriously because they know why we do it and they know it's sort of something that can happen at any given time and it's not something they're surprised with on the day. It's a really good thing to be involving children in that piece. And then the other one would be sort of, for me, leadership. There has to be someone at the service, and it's most likely going to be the nominated supervisor, but you may work under a fire warden system, and it may be the 2IC or someone else, but there has to be someone sort of is taking the lead on implementing all of this stuff. Charge of overseeing incidents when they happen, and drills and practice runs, and then reviewing when that happens, so that there's someone who's sort of going, you know what, we want to take a look at what happened, work out maybe the things we want to improve and do better. It's also really important that this isn't seen as kind of like a blame finding exercise. I think sometimes we kind of see those emergency evacuation rules as sort of finding things that went wrong and then going, well, that person's in trouble. When that's really, you know, the opposite of the intention of these drills. The intention of the drills is to find things that went wrong so we can fix them. They don't happen during a real emergency incident. We actually need to move from a culture of, oh my God, you know, that sign-in record was left there, or you know, that child was really upset during the whole time, or that educator didn't go to the right spot. We need to move away during a drill from then going, well, you're in trouble and we really need to be doing that better, to, gee, that's really great, we found an error in our process, or we worked out a spot where that hasn't quite worked. We kind of want to be thanking the people who made this little mistake there, because they've done it in a safe space. They've done it in an example, in a drill. You know, as long as it's something that's not happening because people aren't taking it seriously, or it's happening, you know, every single time we do a drill, it's, you know, 99% of the time it's just going to be a mistake, and that's great. It's happened during a drill. We can work on it. We really need to shift that idea where identifying problems at that stage are good, and that's actually the point of the exercise. And then you can work together to address those issues, and maybe something that can be solved really quickly, or maybe something you need to really, you know, get some external advice on. It might be a particular problem with your service. And make sure when you do have an example, a drill, an emergency evacuation drill, that you debrief with children, you talk with them about what happened and what we're going to do better next time, and with families as well, so the families know you're taking that really seriously. All right, suggestions for nominated supervisors. Again, this is another straightforward sort of quality area 2 one, so I'm going to be a bit facetious here and go plan, and practice, which is really what the element's asking us to do. But, you know, as nominated supervisor, you want to be embedding these into the learning experiences of the day so they don't feel disruptive. And what I mean by that is we don't want to see emergency evacuations when they come around as these things that are separate from the work of the centre, of the service. They're part of and embedded in the learning of the service. We're teaching children about safety, keeping themselves safe. We're teaching them that sometimes, you know, things can go wrong, but we have a plan for how we're going to address it. And, you know, if educators sort of look at it that way, it's not seen as this thing where, okay, we've got to get through this and we have to do it every 3 months because the regs tell us to, and gee, I hope I don't leave something behind because I'm going to get in lots of trouble. It's seen as a thing. It's a learning experience for everyone involved. And a big bit of advice here is to do them as a combination of scheduled and unscheduled. I talk to a lot of services and a lot of leaders who think that every single one has to be surprised on people. It has to be sprung on people. They're somehow in trouble if they let people know when it's going to happen. And there's nothing about that in the regulations at all. My suggestion would be it's actually really important to schedule and let people know they're coming so they can be planned, prepared. The point of these drills is not people feeling stressed and worried. The point of these drills is actually meant to make people feel comfortable with the process of emergency management. An actual incident emergency will, of course, always be stressful. So you want to take away as much of the stress from the planning and the processing as much as possible, because you want people almost operating on automatic, and they can't do that if every time they've practiced it, they're really stressed. You do want to do some unscheduled ones as well, just to test people's readiness, but my recommendation would be do those maybe in the second half of the year, but let people know, say, look, on this day we're going to practice this, you know, let me know if you're feeling prepared, let me know if you want to be ready on a particular way, but remember, people feeling stressed is not the point of that, so you absolutely can do them as scheduled ones. And then the other big bit of advice for nominated supervisors is focus energies on what would happen if I'm not here. That's a good bit of advice in leadership, you know, full stop, but particularly for emergency management, you want to make sure you've upskilled your team to do this, you know, when you're away. And you know, that'd be a great one to do maybe at the end of the year when you're at a workshop or something, or on a planned day of leave, is run an emergency evacuation then, so you can get a sense of how your team are able to run things. From a legal perspective, this is important because as the nominated supervisor, you're responsible whether you're there or not. So you want to make sure your team is stepping up. Do they know where everything is? Do they know where to go to find things? And, you know, crucially, do they know what to do? So focusing your planning around, can they do this when I'm not here, is a really important part of your role as a nominated supervisor. And my suggestions for the quality improvement plan are pretty straightforward again for this one. The first one I would have would be the service holds regular planning meetings to evaluate and review responses to incident and emergency management. If you can demonstrate you're doing these sort of regular planning meetings where you're really thinking deeply about these issues, that's a great way to be ensuring that improvement in how you do those kind of things. And then my second entry in the quip would be planning for incident and emergency management is regularly shared with educators, families and children. So that's really touching on that communication piece, that we look for different ways that work for particular groups of children, particular families, particular staffing groups to be communicating what we're doing and why we're doing it. All right, well, that's it for element 2.2.2. We'll be back wrapping up Quality Area 2 next week, and then the week after that we'll have our Quality Area 2 overview episode. So I hope you're enjoying these little bonus episodes. Don't forget to subscribe to the Early Education Show as well if you haven't already, and I'll be back next week. Until then, it's goodbye from me.